This is June 5th, 1979. I'm Carl Mosher talking to Patricia Johnson Fleming in their beautiful home, 39 Belvedere Avenue in Belvedere. Pat is a member of several very important families in the history of Marin County, particularly Southern Marin. We'll get to that in just a minute. Well, Pat, tell us something about your family, the Johnsons. Where was your home, and where did your family come from?
Well, it mainly started with my grandfather, Henry S. Bridge. And at the turn of the century, there were some lots that were being auctioned off in Mill Valley. And Mr. Billings and Mr. Hayes and my grandfather came over to Mill Valley and bid on some lots. And the one they wanted to get was up the Cascade Canyon. And that was their first bid, and they didn't get that. But they did get the one on Blythedale Canyon. And that was the whole block of Corte Madera Avenue from about where the big tree is down on Corte Madera Avenue all the way up to Windward Way. And apparently Mr. Hayes was a little bit north of that. And I don't know anything about Mr. Hayes, but you said you had interviewed Mrs. Kyler, and of course she was the granddaughter of Mr. Billings. So my grandfather and Mr. Billings divided up that whole area and into two spots. And as I say, that was about the turn of the century. And then my family lived in San Francisco, and Mr. Bridge had, and Mrs. Bridge, Carrie, had four daughters. Elizabeth Currier, who eventually lived in Berkeley, and the next one was my mother, Dorothy Bridge Johnson, who was the one who lived in Mill Valley later on when I lived there, and Barbara Bridge, and then Marjorie Bridge Farquhar, who now is living in Berkeley. And I was talking to my Auntie Marge, and she said that they first started out with having tents. They would come over in the summertime, and they put up tents on the property, and they would use it in the summertime. And then after the fire, they moved over there permanently, and they built the house at 186 Corte Madera Avenue, and it still stands. And it was about...
Who lives there now? Do you know that?
No, I don't know who lives there. Mother sold it, I guess, about 20 years ago, and a couple moved in there, and then they didn't stay too long, and then somebody else bought it. So unfortunately, it was a beautiful, big, shingled house, and the people who bought it right after Mother sold it painted it blue, a bright powder blue that was, you know, it was hard on us to even go buy the house because it was so contrary to what the house, you know, really was. But at any rate, I decided that, looking back on dates, I was born in Belvedere on Beach Road in 1919. And then we moved to the city for a few years. So I would say it was around 1923 when we permanently moved to Mill Valley. However, the family lived there on and off. In other words, my grandmother didn't like the winters. It was very cold, and you know, it was dark up in that canyon. And in those days, they just had a fireplace for heat and an oil heater in the fireplace of the dining room.
When you say grandmother, you're referring to Mrs. Bridge?
Yes, Carrie. Carrie Bridge.
Don't forget to tell us what your father's occupation was.
Oh, all right. Well, my father just sort of came here because of marriage, you see, into the Bridge family. I mean, Dad didn't really have anything to do with Mill Valley. It all goes back on my mother's side to her father. My father was in insurance, and his name was Herbert B. Johnson. And his family lived in Berkeley. But so Annie Marge said that they would live in the city in the wintertime, and then would come over to Berkeley. Then as the girls got older, as soon as anybody went to college, the first one that went to the University of California was Elizabeth, and my grandmother immediately said, oh, well, now we have to move to Berkeley. So they would move to Berkeley and then come back in the summers, and then time marched on, and then Barbara went to the University of California, so they had to move to Berkeley again. I gathered from what my aunt Annie Marge said that my grandmother really It wasn't her cup of tea. It was a sort of hardship over here, you know, compared to a nice, maybe a house in Berkeley with heat and everything. But at any rate, we moved there, I guess, about 1923, and then all my childhood I spent in Mill Valley. And of course it was, except for the beautiful mountain and the redwood trees, it was vastly different in those days than it is today. However, I do feel that the one thing good about it that continues on, I believe that most people who live in Mill Valley live there because they love Mill Valley. And I think that's, you know, that maybe the type of people have changed. In other words, we now have people that commute to Los Angeles for their work and things like that, but of course it was quite different.
What was it like growing up in Mill Valley in the 20s?
Oh, it was perfectly delightful, Carl. I mean, it was, Mill Valley was the downtown area was very small compared to what it is now. And I remember mainly like Suey Key, and then the, I'm talking about shopping, Suey Key was one grocery store. And that is now where the Sinapa Farms is. And then the Mill Valley Market was up on what's that street?
Throckmorton.
And then I remember the Pritchard Hardware Store. I remember that. And
where was that?
That was located about where the Mill Valley Bookstore is now. Mm-hmm. And then our wonderful Eastland Bakery. When I was thinking about this, I thought, I remember walking downtown. I'm going to say, I need a loaf of bread. We walked downtown for the loaf of bread. As I recall, it was about 15 cents. And the school, of course, there was Summit School. All my family went to Summit School. And three of them went to Town Pies High School. And at any rate, and my sister and I went to TAM and Summit School.
You speak of your sister,
Carol Long.
You just have one sister and no brother?
I had a brother, and he passed away about 15 years ago. And he was really my half-brother. His name was Richard Wright. My mother was married before she married my father, so that's where Richard, Dick came from. But one thing I remember so much about, everybody walked in those days, Carl. You know, everybody walked. I mean, if you went downtown to do your shopping or something, you walked. And of course, I mean, when I was growing up, there was delivery service. Mother would get on the telephone and call downtown, and by noon, you know, all the groceries had arrived. And I remember she'd sit there on the stairway where the phone was sort of on the wall, and she'd, I've got to get my order in for the day. But, you know, we didn't have, of course, naturally, supermarkets, and it was...
How many deliveries a day?
Well, I think you had to have the order in by 9 in order to have the, I imagine just one. But I do remember a wonderful Chinese vegetable man that would come around with his baskets on either side. And I don't remember whether he came around daily or what, but I remember, you know, beautiful vegetables. And one of the things I remember is the garbage collection. They only billed you once a year for that. Can't remember how much it was. I imagine it wasn't very much, but once a year you got a bill. And of course, where we lived, next to us was the Billings, and they dammed the creek. That was one of my most pleasant memories of my childhood. They dammed the creek, and so there was always a wonderful swimming hole there to swim in. I mean, a natural, you know, it was cold, but, and then the creek, you know, went right by our property. And another thing I remember was the railroad train. It went right up the railroad behind our house, and the whole dining room would just, you know, vibrate. Not dangerously so, the glasses would fall off, but the whole, you always knew when that train was going by because the whole dining room would vibrate.
You're talking about the Mountain Railroad.
The Mountain Railroad, yes. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. And that was a fun thing. I mean, we went on it many, many times. In fact, it's interesting, my husband Bill, who lived in Corte Madera, he never went on that railroad. And we were talking about it, and I said, well, why didn't you ever go on that as a child? And he said, well, we probably just didn't, it was expensive, you know, and during the Depression days, well, we probably just, you know, it was too much for my family to, it was a big excursion. But that was, you know, lots of fun. But to go back to what Mill Valley was like, it was, you know, the scenery, as I say, was very much like it is today, but it was just a calmer, not hustle bustle, and nobody worried about parking their car, and it was just like any other city, I guess, in Marin County that far back. But it was a delightful place to live. And of course, the train and the ferries were, you know, so important to us, because we, you know, it was really delightful. If you're going to the city, you take the train to Sausalito and change onto the ferry and have a relaxing trip to San Francisco. And another thing I remember, the hikers would arrive, you know, Sunday morning. It would just be down at the train station, just a mass of people rolling off the trains that would take off and hike the mountains, hike the mountain.
Did you do much hiking?
No. The only real hiking I ever did was at Tahoe. We used to go to Fallen Leaf Lake every year, and it was just sort of a thing that we had to do. In other words, you were allowed 2 days to rest, and then the first hike was to a short hike to a nearby lake, Angora Lake, and then the next hike was to Mount Tulak, and then about the next week, we did Desolation Valley. So I kind of learned up having to do it. It was the thing to do and expected of you to do it, so I don't really love hiking.
Well, as you say, you walked nearly everywhere you went.
We did.
Mm-hmm. 20s and 30s, so it does make a big difference.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, even after that, I remember moving away in the city during the war, and then, it was about 1946, Bill and I moved back, and I didn't drive a car. And so, in fact, we rented Mrs. Clinton's guest cottage, you know, the little cottage up and back, and that was a lot of stairs up to it. And I used to walk downtown every day with Dennis in the tailor tot and do my shopping, and just thought nothing of it. So this, with the gas shortage, you're very much aware that the walking is just, people just don't do it anymore. They just hop in their car and go to the supermarket, you know.
You referred to the mountain train.
Mm-hmm.
How long did it take to go to the top? Do you recall?
No, I don't exactly, Carl. I'd say about an hour.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. But the most fun, of course, was taking the roller. We call it the roller coaster. The open car.
Mm-hmm.
Down.
The gravity car.
That's right, the gravity car, and that was the most fun. I mean, we didn't do it every weekend or anything, but I mean, we're always aware of it because we live right there, and then as you crossed the little bridge across the creek behind our house, there was a little station right there, and the train, you know, stopped right there.
What personalities downtown stick out in your memory? Any of the merchants or any situation there?
Well, as far as merchants go, I mainly the Eastland Bakery. I remember that, and of course the ones I had mentioned before, Sui Key, where he always had, you know, beautiful vegetables. And of course the Mill Valley Market always had very selective and very nice things. But I know, Carl, you know, you were related to your Moshe's shoes, and there wasn't anything mm-hmm. like that. Along in life, I remember they did have a children's store, but I just don't remember that. He wasn't a merchant, but I remember the dentist. It was upstairs in the mayor building, right there on the corner, and that was the dentist, except another one was over there in the Keystone building. And I remember the real estate. Of course, my grandfather was in real estate, and later on, when we were growing up, they lived in Berkeley, and he would come over every week, practically every weekend, and Mother would pick him up at the station, and he'd go across and to the real estate office, and then usually every Saturday afternoon, my mother would have to drive him around to all these little places to collect the rents. I mean, $10 here, $15 there, you know, $25 is a big rent per month then. And he owned, you know, quite a few little houses. They were just small houses. In fact, it's quite amazing to me. Some of those little houses naturally are still standing. That probably, you know, he bought them for $1,000, and they're really very high up in the range
worth
now.
Worth a fortune now.
Yeah.
Did the movies play a big part in your life in those days? I know people some talk sometimes about the Hub Theater.
The Hub Theater. Well, I remember it very well. Yes, they always had good movies on Saturday afternoon, and you know, for the children, the Mickey Mouse and that routine, and then definitely a movie for children. But I don't remember. I remember the Hub Theater, of course, and going to the Hub Theater, but I don't remember going to the movies very much. We went, but not an awful lot.
In looking at some of the old newspapers going back to the 20s and even 30s, I'm impressed with what a big part the game of baseball played in people's lives.
Mm-hmm.
A town baseball team now doesn't get any recognition at all, but I find on the local paper headlines and big articles on the front page about the local baseball team.
Yeah, well, my brother, Dick Wright, was quite a baseball player.
Is that right?
Yeah. And, well, do we have a adult baseball team?
Not in the same sense.
No. Well, don't you think tennis has taken over? And running? And that,
yachting. And
yeah, that's right.
Hiking and so on.
Uh-huh. And probably getting away. You see, everybody with the automobile, you know, goes places all the time now, whereby we were set in a lovely environment, and the only time we would go away is maybe in the summertime, 2 weeks to a fall and they play. But I mean, now people are going all the time away for weekends. I mean, in those days, it would take 7 hours to drive to Fallen Leaf Lake. I mean, now you're up there probably in 3.5 or 4 hours. And I think that's the difference.
Mm-hmm. When your parents went to the movie, did they go to Mill Valley or did they go to the city?
Oh, no, Mill Valley. Uh-huh. Yeah. Because it was, you know, it would be a all-night trip to go over there to the movie. Yeah, people didn't go to the city, you know, very much for anything.
Where were you in 1929, 50 years ago, when the big fire came along? Were you in
Mill Valley? Remember it very well. Very, very well. So we were in the house.
At the beginning, tell me all about it.
Well, first of all, I remember that it was a very, very hot day. And there was a very strong, dry wind blowing. And of course, down in the canyon where we were, we got, you know, didn't get very much wind. But I mean, that was, it just blew. And it started in, and then, as you know, it just got worse and worse and worse. In fact, it got to the point where they were going to start blasting to save the downtown part of Mill Valley on blasting at Lovell Avenue. But what I remember most about it was that my brother and a couple of his friends were on the roof with the hose, because all of the other side of Cota Madera Avenue, all those houses up on, well, on Cota Madera, but you got to them by a trail. It was above Cota Madera Avenue. And all of those houses burned. So tremendous cinders were just, you know, coming over onto our roof. And so, and I remember my father taking all our dolls, and my sister and my dolls, and putting them all down by the creek. And particularly I remember a great big grandfather's clock that I believe is still in the family, not a grandfather's clock, a great big mantel clock that had been a wedding present to my grandmother and grandfather, and it was always on the mantel in the dining room. And my father went out in the middle of in the garden and just dug this tremendous big hole. And I remember he placed it in there, in the garden. And of course, all the silver was taken out and buried in the garden. But I mean, we really felt that it was going. And it got so bad that all of the children, I mean, and my mother, my sister and I, went down to Boy Scout Hall. That was where everybody was sort of, the refugees were, you see.
What day of the week was this, do you remember?
No, I don't remember the day of the week. But it was very interesting because my mother was a marvelous cook, and I remember she just made her favorite pie, a coconut cream pie, and she put it in the cooler.
Your mother was just putting her pie in the cooler.
Oh, yeah. And so she put it in the cooler, and I remember she said, this was in the afternoon, she said, well, we might as well eat this pie because she said it'll just be burned up. So we all sat down and ate a piece of this beautiful coconut cream pie. But at any rate, I remember going down to Scout Hall, and that is where we were. But one of the terrors of the whole thing that I remember vividly was At that time, Lucian and Margaret Marsh lived in the Marsh home, and of course the fire was very bad up there. And as I recall, I think they were away, but there was somebody staying there, and they had a little child. And the nurse, being afraid of the fire going there, had gone down the trail to Blithedale. And she apparently was very frightened, and she had hidden with the child underneath one of the bridges, a stone bridge that goes across, and nobody could find her. And of course the Marshes were very close to my mom and dad, and they were very good friends. So I remember the family being extremely worried about that. But later on, they did find them in the evening, but everybody was afraid they had gotten burned in the brushes, and I remember that was terrible. Well, and then I know another memory I have of it, we went back and slept in the house that night, and it was just this terrible, you know, smoky smell, and of course all the hill across was all black. And then I remember the Uppins, they up on Lovell Avenue, they were good, very good friends of my family's, and their house was completely gone. But it was a terrible thing, Carl, to watch, you know, beautiful Mill Valley, and not only that, with something like that, you don't know where it's going to end. As you're looking back on it, you feel, well, the town was saved and the houses were demolished, but eventually were rebuilt and the trees have grown. But at the moment, it was a very terrifying thing. Because of this hot wind, that was the thing, you see, and it was almost like a miracle because our house definitely would have gone. It was about, I think, 5 or 6 o'clock at night when the wind just completely turned and it more or less died down and it turned its direction because the cinders were really large, about the size of an orange, that were just being blown over onto the house continually, and it would have just jumped the road there. And of course there's so much brush up in there, it's always green foliage, but it would have lost it. But none of those houses, you know, did go, so we personally were not really affected, except feeling and mother had a very good friend, Alice Owen, and I remember her, you know, helping her, and she lived up in up a trail on McGee Avenue. But we used to go up a trail to get to her house, and she was a very good friend of mother's. And, they had to get out and everything. I mean, it was, really devastating, in those days, because it was, you just didn't know what was going to happen. It was not a nice experience.
You were obviously alarmed, you and your family, early in the day.
Oh, yes.
Uh-huh. Early in the afternoon, started after.
I don't know what time did the fire start.
Apparently sometime between 1 and 2 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
In that bracket.
Mm-hmm.
If your dad had time to dig a hole and bury some things, he was foresighted. He was alarmed early in the day.
Yes, well, you see, it started, up high, and then, then came
mm-hmm.
down, so
mm-hmm.
we had a few hours to get prepared for this. But
did the fire burn over the bridge where this lady was hiding with the little kid?
Well, it's a cement bridge. It's right up.
It
did
it
not.
Could go past
no,
the
it did not go down to that point. You see, it never did cross the road. It didn't cross West Blithedale and go to the other side at all. Mm-hmm. It just burned right down to that point and then back. Well, like Ruth White Bowie's house. It was practically. It was all around that, and they saved that house. And, of course, that house, I believe, is cement. That's probably
mm-hmm.
one reason.
Yeah. It would have to start on the inside,
yeah.
so to speak, to do
uh-huh.
anything much to it. Yeah, that was a fearsome experience, I'm sure, for everyone here.
Well, I think that's why even today when they close the road up there or something, it's a very smart thing to do because it just takes, one thing to get something started like that.
What was your impression then of how it started?
I just didn't. I don't have any, Carl.
Mm-hmm.
If I ever heard, I had forgotten. I suppose
it
was a cigarette off the train, wasn't it, or something?
I think that's sort of a consensus.
Uh-huh.
Not everyone agrees, of course.
Uh-huh.
Because you were just 10 years old, so you're full of impressions, but
uh-huh,
you don't
right.
remember all the details.
No.
Yeah.
What
did they do around here when growing up in early Mill Valley in the way of play? Did you skate? Did you have stilts, or what were you doing?
Well, we remember skating. Now skating is becoming popular again. In fact, Bill and I were talking about it the other day. In the old days, of course, we had, metal skates, and it was where we lived. There wasn't the road wasn't very good, and so we would go up Windward Way, the stairs to what was then called Cottage Avenue, which is now West Flydale. And there's a wonderful little piece of sidewalk, and mm-hmm. every afternoon we'd go up there and skate. And it was, you know, really big. And compared to now, now here's just the difference, where they buy it, the young people buy the boots and the skates attached. I will admit they're nice and quiet. But, I mean, they're putting out $89 or something like that to $125 for these, you know, mm-hmm. outfits. And I don't remember what skates cost, but I probably $2, $2.50 or something like that. But, well, we used to swim a lot, and we would take hikes, walks in Muir Woods, up the mountain, picnic. I remember bicycling, and always bicycled to school, and always when I went to Tam High School, I bicycled, except the only time I didn't bicycle is when it was raining, and then I would, you know, take the train. But one of the nicest rides we used to do would be leave Mill Valley and come over to Belvedere. And I still think of it today when I drive in and I'm behind traffic. There were absolutely no houses, you know. And then by the trestle was a beautiful dairy. And just before you get to where the trestle was going to Mill Valley from here, there was that hill was covered with Johnny Jump-Ups. And I remember coming over there in spring and picking Johnny Jump-Ups. And I still think of it, you know, all the wildflowers are gone. And I've often wondered what happens to them. I mean, a bulldozer comes in and turns up the soil, but what happens to those seeds? You'd think they'd be scattered and come up someplace, but I haven't seen a Johnny jump up in years. But see, compared to now, Carl, everything was simplified. In other words, I remember we had dancing school down at the Art Der Art Club. And then people would have parties, and as you got to be a teenager, usually there was a birthday party or a dance, and the girls would get dressed up in party dresses, and the boys, and we'd go to somebody's house and have dinner and dance, and it was all very, very proper, you know, nicely dressed, good behavior, and of course most of us were from the dancing school, and that the Art Der Art Club sponsored. Mm-hmm.
Was that ballet mostly?
Oh, no, ballroom dancing I'm talking about.
I see.
And they also had, well, I also went to dancing classes at the Art Der Art Club, and ballet and tap and that kind of thing. No, but I'm just talking about what young people did.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, when you got a little bit older, you went to the assemblies that was always held at the Lagunitas Club. And there were some Mill Valley people, but mainly they were from, you know, upper county. But there were more social things, nice social things that we did then, you know, than you do now.
Well, of course, you had radio, but no television.
Right.
And that has a profound
influence. Oh, undoubtedly it does. Uh-huh.
On all these things, uh-huh. I think. Of course, you were you started to high school, what, 1932, roughly?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Incidentally, did you have a particular girlfriend or girlfriends during this growing up period?
Yes, one of my best girlfriends was Mary Elizabeth Swearingen, who lived at, I even remember her address, 61 Catalpa. Unfortunately, she passed away about 20 years ago. But she was my very best friend. And, there were other friends that I had too, but none of them have come back to Mill Valley. In fact, it's interesting, Carl, when I grew up in Mill Valley, all right, then I was married in 1941. Bill lived in the city, it was wartime, and he went in the service. And about 1944, we moved back here. And believe it or not, there were about three people in Mill Valley that I knew, Casey Mills being one that has stayed on. But Casey and I, Casey was a little bit older than I was, and so we didn't grow up as real pals. I mean, we're very good friends, but it wasn't like that. And, you know, when you're growing up and in class, you go with the person that your friends, your intimate friends, are your age. I mean, not a year older or a year younger or anything like that.
People you can share all your experiences.
Right.
And fears.
But there isn't anybody, really, there aren't any of the friends that I had that, you know, stayed on Mill Valley. In fact, it's too bad because I really lost contact. I don't know where any of them are.
Hmm.
But Mill Valley, that's what I say, basically has changed tremendously. I mean, there's certainly some lovely old-timers left, but very few young people move back here. Undoubtedly what happened, they went away to college and met a person from another place and were married and then moved away, you know. And
well, I'll have to admit that the other day I went through your high school annual class of 1936.
Oh.
And I was struck with the fact that I didn't know anybody either. I thought I would see some people who were still around, but you really have to look a long time to find a single one.
Uh-huh.
I found your senior picture, incidentally, and I thought you were easily the most attractive girl in there.
Oh, girl.
But that's another story in part. Who were your close friends in high school? Anyone in particular?
Well, still Liz. Liz was my... person I remember, she lived right next door to us. They rented a one of the houses on the Billings property, and her name was Maricia Van Loon, and her mother was a school teacher at Old Mill School, and she was just a lovely, lovely person, and apparently left widowed, and had two boys, Paul and Bert, and Maricia. And Maricia was one of my very, very best friends. Unfortunately, the last I heard of her, she was living in Placerville, and I don't know her married name. And I don't know, I heard that Bert had passed away, and I don't know about Paul. But she was another one of my good friends. But and then there's another girl. But you see, none of these people live here, so that doesn't mean anything to Mill Valley anymore.
Not anymore.
Amazing. No. It's too bad.
What do you remember about the... principal of the high school, Mr. Wood?
Well, what I think of him now and what I thought of him then are maybe a little different. I was always one of these sort of goody-goodies. I really didn't do anything wrong because I didn't want to do anything wrong. But I imagine if you were a clown or if you wanted to, you know, you misbehaved all the time, why, you wouldn't have very fond memories of Mr. Wood. He was a marvelous man with a wonderful family. And I think more in my memories than Mr. Wood would be the Dean of Men and the Dean of Women, Miss White. Because in those days, of course, we wore a uniform, the navy blue, pleated skirt, the white midi, with a black tie until you were a senior, and then you were allowed the white.
All the girls at TAM dressed like that?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Gee, I don't think I ever heard that.
Oh,
that's
didn't
very
you?
Interesting.
No. Well, we wore the black skirt, as I say, and the white midi, which was cotton, and mm-hmm. had to be washed and starched. And then we had a black serge collar that buttoned on with white stripes, like a sailor's collar. Exactly. Then we wore a black silk tie. And then when the seniors all wore red ties. But one thing I remember about that uniform was that, of course, during the Depression times, you know, things were really rough. And a lot of people, to have that collar, that navy blue collar, look right, it had to go to the cleaners. And as I recall, it was about 25 cents. However, the black part buttoned on so it didn't rub against your neck. So you could really wear it for, you know, a month or so before it had to go to the cleaners. But a lot of girls just washed the collars. And it was, you know, as I look back on it, Carl, you could always kind of know the poor kids. I mean, the kids that really... were really desperate because their collars were always, the lines were never white. They were sort of, they're blue, you know, because the navy, the wool had gone into that white. But at any rate, of course, you were big stuff when you got to the red tie, and then you could wear a plain white collar. That was the privilege to being a senior. You didn't have to button on that navy blue. But of course, looking back, uniforms were very good. In fact, I still think uniforms are very good. Because in the long run, it really cuts down the expenses. You buy two uniforms for a child, and that takes care of them, you know, for, say, a couple of years. In fact, Debbie, our daughter, went to Mount Carmel, and they wore a uniform, and then she went to Dominican, and they wore a uniform. And, of course, today, in this liberal world we're in, I mean, the kids probably wouldn't go for it at all. The uniform seems to be jeans and a T-shirt at the moment.
If even that.
Yeah. And I forget the original question, how I got into the uniforms.
Well, we were just talking about your TAM years.
Oh, well, they were wonderful years. We just had, I had a wonderful time. We had a lot of fun. And of course, I was very interested in sports and went out for absolutely every single sport. I mean, swimming mainly. I was on the swimming team and played basketball and badminton and hockey and did everything but baseball. In fact, my mother used to complain and say that I spent too much time on sports. But as I look back on it, it was really fun because, I know what you were asking me about. I was telling you about Miss White. But Miss White, the girls' principal or whatever she was, dean of girls, was extremely strict. I mean, in today's world, you know, she wouldn't last 2 days. I mean, she was just, she had a sort of a bitter face, never smiled and was never gracious or never, she really didn't give the impression she was kind. However, in adulthood, I remember knowing Miss White and becoming extremely fond of her. I'd meet her downtown and say, hello, Miss White, and she was very gracious and very nice. But of course, the boy's, what was his name? Bill would know his name. But I mean, it was very strict. Like if you were late, you know, to class, you had to report to the office and write down your reasoning, and then you were deprived. In other words, like fourth period was a free period, and you could either use it for studying or going to the library. But if you were late or something, I mean, you were deprived of your fourth period. So, I mean, you know, we really had rules and regulations that you had to abide by. There was just none of this fooling around. And also in grammar school, too. I can remember being scared to death of most of my teachers, except Mrs. Mills, was Katie's mother-in-law, was absolutely my most favorite. She was the dearest teacher, and you learned a lot, but she was just a very sweet teacher. But, of course, discipline was very, very important. In other words, they had deportment. In other words, if you spoke when you weren't supposed to, when you weren't asked to speak in class, I mean, you had 1 point against you, and that showed on your report card. And it was just an entirely different world than it is today.
These things go in cycles, don't they?
Do you think they will come back?
They're beginning to swing back toward more authority now.
Do you think so?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can see it. I can feel it. I'm quite sure of it. What are your memories of your mother? What kind of a person was she during all these years up to high school?
Well, my mother was a very active person.
What was her first name again?
Dorothy.
Yeah, okay.
Dorothy B. Johnson. She was a great golfer. Golf and gardening were her big interests. I mean, mother and daddy belonged to the Mill Valley Country Club. It was the Mill Valley Country Club in those days. And golf was very important to both of them. I mean, mother would play at least 3 or 4 times a week, and Saturday or Sunday. And my father was a magnificent golf player. In fact, I have many of their silver cups that they won in tournaments. And then later on in years, they both belonged to the Meadow Club and still continued, you know, playing golf. She was a wonderful cook, a wonderful gardener. In fact, my mother was a perfectionist. She was very, more or less hard to live with. I mean, very much a perfectionist and expected a great deal of you as a person.
How did that rub off on you?
I do many of the things now that my mother did. In other words, I love to cook. I love to garden. I know quite a bit about gardening, just through probably growing up with it. I don't play bridge. Mother and dad were avid bridge players. And to get back to the social life of those days, I mean, the thing was to entertain your friends for dinner, like we do today, of course, and then, you know, have a game of bridge. And in fact, it's interesting, Bill and I don't, either one of us play bridge. And my husband's always said that he didn't really want to learn because he never gets to see his friends anyway. And so he didn't, when we do see them, he doesn't want to be worrying about a game of bridge. He wants to chat with them. So that's why we've never taken up. But anyway, in those days, they really, you know, really played bridge. And mother was active in the PTA when we were in school. And of course, I remember too, you know, Carl, financially. I mean, we didn't have it easy. In fact, my mother and father were separated when I was 12 years old. And so they were separated until after Bill and I were married in 1942. It was very interesting. When I was married, I wanted my father to give me away, and that was okay with my mother. And so Bill and I were married at the Catholic Church in Larkspur, and then we had the wedding reception in our house in Mill Valley, and it was a beautiful day, and we were out in the garden. And my father and my mother saw each other for the first time in many, many years. And it was very interesting, because a couple of years afterwards, they went back together again and celebrated their 25th wedding anniversary, and all the friends in Mill Valley gave them a party. In fact, this lovely box that was made by Lucian Marsh and Company, all those names on there were at their party on their 25th wedding anniversary. And this is ivory set in the wood. And these were all the people that were mother's and dad's friends that are engraved in that box.
What a great memento. Beautiful. Isn't that nice?
Yeah. But anyway, to get back to mother, well, I don't know. She was lots of fun. And as I look back on my childhood, I had a very wonderful childhood. I mean, it was struggling there during the Depression. I mean, there were many things we went without, but because I already remember saying, well, now we're not going to have any Christmas presents this year. And then invariably there would be presents underneath the tree. So we certainly didn't have it as bad as I'm sure, you know, many, many people did have it. But
did the Depression have anything to do with your parents' separation?
No.
Did your father support the family in Mill Valley during the remainder of the Depression from 32 until they got back together in 41?
No.
I just wondered how they...
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't really remember how things worked out, but he didn't help out like he should have.
But it sounds awfully nice that they got back together.
Oh, it was wonderful.
Declining years anyway.
Yeah. Well, that didn't last very long, Carl. They were only back a few years, and then they were separated again. So, but as you can see, I mean, most of my childhood was tied in with my mother's family in their relationship to Mill Valley, and of course, my grandfather was a great force in my family as I look back on it. He was English and of definitely the old school, and what he said was law, and everybody jumped. And, of course, as I said, he would come over every weekend, and he was part of our household, you know. But he was a wonderful, wonderful fellow. And another thing I remember about my childhood really doesn't have anything to do with Mill Valley, but my grandmother had a little boat. It was about 35 feet, called the Miss Muffet. And we used to go out on that a lot on the weekends and up the Sacramento River.
This was a power boat?
Yeah, a power boat. Uh-huh. And in fact, he used to keep it up at Antioch. But a lot of our... weekend time was spent on this little on the boat. You know, we'd go up the Sacramento River, and it was lots of fun.
What are your memories? I mean, some more of them of both the bridges, your grandmother and grandfather.
Well, Carl, it's kind of interesting because my grandfather and my grandmother married brothers and sisters, and the other branch of the bridge family. Is the Fred Bridge family, who lived in Sausalito, and my grandmother and grandfather met in Belvedere in the rowing club or something. And her sister, Maybridge, lived in Belvedere. And so I'm very close to her children, like Winnie Allen in Belvedere, who passed away a couple of years ago, was... came from the other side. In other words, you see, my grandmother and grandfather married brother and sister. So, I mean, all of the Frederick Bridges really came over here. In other words, Harry Allen, you see, he was Annie Winnie's husband. He built Seacliff. They lived in San Francisco. He developed it. All right, he came over to Belvedere and he developed Belvedere.
What was his first name again?
Harry.
And this is somebody who married another one of those four daughters, Bridges.
No.
Oh.
No. Cousins. The first cousins of the Bridges. Oh. You see, there was, on my side, there was Elizabeth and Dorothy and Barbara and Marge. All right, on the, to make it simple. And on the Frederick Bridge, that was the Henry Bridge side. On the Frederick part, Fred Bridge, was Winnie Bridge, Arthur Bridge, who lived in Southern California, and Helen Bridge, who still lives in Belvedere. In fact, Helen is very interesting because Helen and my Auntie Marge are very close because they're just about the same age. They're 75 now. But Auntie Helen never married Miss Helen Bridge, and years and years ago, my great-great-grandparents had a ranch up in, Sonoma County, and she bought that, and that's where she spends most of her time, and it after all these years of being out of the family, she found it and bought it, and so she spends most of her time there. I can't remember how I started on this question.
Well, the general question was about your maternal grandparents, the two Bridges.
Oh, yeah. Well,
Where they came from?
Oh,
it
all
interests
right.
me,
well,
too,
my,
how
well,
they got to California.
Yeah, no, all about that. My grandfather came from, basically from England, and then Boston, and then came out to San Francisco. In fact, it was very interesting about him, because he came out to San Francisco in San Francisco as a tailor. And he was a tailor. And how he eventually got into real estate was he really made his money on second mortgages. And it probably started out with one, maybe had a little money and he invested. I really don't know how it all started out. But that is how he eventually went into the real estate business. And then my grandmother also came from England, and they met in Boston. And came out here. And of course, they were distant cousins to begin with, so that probably drew them together, you see. And of course, on my father's side, I had nothing to do with Marin County, but it's very interesting because my grandfather Johnson, they lived in Belvedere. They lived in Berkeley. But he had a very interesting life because he lived in Japan, and my father lived there for quite some time. And he was a Methodist minister in Japan.
What was his name again?
Was my father's name or the grandfather?
No, the grandfather.
But, I can't think of his first name. I can't think of his first name right now. I just call him Grandpa Johnson. But I really can't think of it. I could go look it up, but I just can't think of it offhand. But of course, they didn't have anything. You know, they didn't have anything to do with Marin County. All the Marin County that we are from is from the Bridge.
I'm sorry, I interrupted you. You were
That's
talking
right.
about the Methodist minister.
Oh,
is there anything to add to that?
No, I don't think so. But they did. My father lived out in Japan for a long time.
How do the Allens figure in this relationship?
Well, my grandfather's brother, Fred, to make it simple, had three children. Winnie Bridge Allen was his oldest child, you see. Then next to that came Arthur Bridge, whose wife still lives in Belvedere, but they spent most of their life down in Southern California. He was head of the Southern California Electric Company. And then Miss Helen Bridge still lives in Belvedere part-time. But that was why, that's the Fred Bridge line of the family, whereby my part comes from Henry. And so, with two brothers marrying two sisters. So, when my mother was growing up, I mean, they were very, very close, because the Allens had a summer home in Belvedere, which Winnie Bridge Allen's youngest son, Howie, now has as their home. It was right next door to the Allen home, up on Golden Gate Avenue. But they were very, very close as a family. I mean, because they lived in San Francisco, and then their two mothers, you see, Winnie's mother, say, just take Winnie, who was the oldest, and my mother, who were very good friends. In fact, they were born the same month, same year. They were cousins, but they were double cousins. And I think maybe two in those days, families were inclined to be even closer. But I mean, here was one branch in Mill Valley and the other branch in Belvedere, you know, and so they used to go boating and picnicking and do everything together. And then, see, Winnie's mother was my grandmother's sister. So they were just very, very close, having two sisters married two brothers. So it's always been a very, very close-knit family.
Did I hear you refer earlier to some member of the family developing?
Yes,
land
Winnie,
development here.
Winnie Bridge Allen, who just passed away a couple years ago, her husband, husband, Harry Allen, developed Seacliff in San Francisco. And then he came over here before the war, and I think he bought stock in the Belvedere Land Company. And I forget the details of it. Bill knows the details. But at any rate, he worked out something where he owned the majority of the property. He'd only come into the venture if he owned the majority of the property. And then he was the one that developed all of the lagoon down here and built all these houses down along here, down the shore, which today, it was interesting, would never be allowed. In other words, Annie Bob built this house. And when she built this house, there were no houses down there at all.
Annie Bob, would you identify?
Yeah, all right. Annie Bob
carefully?
Is the third Bridge sister on my side of the family. Barbara Bridge. But anyway, to get back to Harry, I mean, he was just apparently a genius. I mean, he put in all of Belvedere. In fact, there were very few houses here. In fact, when Annie Bob built this house 28 years ago, there wasn't anything down on this side of the island except way down at the end. I mean, she had her pick of what lot she wanted. And so that shows you that. But I mean, Harry just, you know, was, Bill always feels he was an absolute genius to think of that lagoon, because he's made it, it's most attractive. And look at the pleasure that it's brought, you know, so many people.
Mm-hmm. She made a good selection. This is a gorgeous location, of course.
Yeah.
Couldn't beat it. Well, you're now graduated from Tam High School.
Oh, just that, huh?
Then where
okay.
did you go?
I went to College of Marin for a year and a half, mainly, Carl, because I had a C in the chemistry and a C in 1 year in French, and of course you had to have A's and B's and to get to Cal, and I was determined I was going to Cal. Anyway, so I went to Cal. And
when, what class did that mean?
I graduated in 1941 from University of California. And that was, you know, that was, in fact, it's kind of interesting, Carl. That was a very interesting experience, because in those days, you've asked what Mill Valley was like. It was a very protected life. Now, one of the things I remember is that, of course, everybody knew everybody. That was the thing. In other words, it wasn't like it is today. I mean, who are you going out with? I mean, well, who's this boy? What's his family background, et cetera, et cetera. That was known, you know, except like maybe at Tam. But it was easy enough to find out, you know, about who was, and everybody knew everybody. And it was, you know, just cozy, just nice. And, but at any rate, one of the things that stands out in my mind, I don't know whether it belongs in this tape or not, but I think it's interesting, is that when I say Mill Valley was a protected life, I went to Cal, and can't remember what my freshman year or sophomore year, I had a Jewish girl as a roommate. I had never heard the word Jew or Jewish mentioned. Not that it was a no-no. It was simply, I mean, why bring it up? Or why even talk about it, you know? I mean, there was absolutely, you know, just, we were brought up in this area, no racial prejudice at all, because there was absolutely no reason to be. But when I look back at the friends that I had in TAM, there were a few people that were Jewish, we never even knew that, you know? And I think of those things that come out now. Of course, you know, we never had any blacks in this area, so there was no problem. In fact, junior and senior year, I lived at International House in the University of California, which was a marvelous experience. In fact, Verda Mae Kiernan, not from Marin County, but she was one of my college friends, and she was doing graduate work, and we had rooms right next door to each other. And it was first night, and I said, well, come on, Verda, I guess we better go down for dinner. Oh, I'm not going down there. I said, well, why aren't you? Well, I'm not going to walk through that living room and have all those people staring at me. But there were, you know, the Arab, the Hindus, and and I said, well, why not, Verda? I said, well, she said, well, they'll just stare at me. And I said, well, you might just as well start in tonight, because if you don't start in tonight, you'll be starving, because you've got to go through that foyer in order to get to the dining room. But, I mean, well, I bring this up because it doesn't mean anything today, Carl, but it was an experience for somebody who lived in small town Mill Valley. I mean, that's how small town it was. You went to the city, you know, big deal. I remember arguing with my mother on the train. She'd start making me put my gloves on the train. And I'd say, well, I'm not to the city yet. And I'd take them off. Put on your gloves. I mean, this is where you went to the city with a little hat and a coat and white gloves. But Mill Valley, I think you look back on it, you lived a very protected life. Because you learn all these things in grammar school, apparently, today, that was an eye-opener when you went to college if you lived in a small town like Mill Valley. But I think it's kind of interesting because everybody, you know, the kids just know apparently all the answers to everything. And then when I was growing up, they just unfolded very gradually. But I have never gotten over that fact that a couple of the people, you know, that when I went to college, it was a great big jump compared to what it is today. I still think scholastically it's a big jump for a student, but worldwide I don't think it is. You know, like if you lived in Marin County and you went to the University of California, so what, you're just moving across the bay. Mm-hmm. But when I went to the University of California, it was a big contrast between small Mill Valley, little old Mill School, Town Pius High School, where everybody knew everybody's name, you know, to go. And that was, and then even junior college, I mean, it was very, very small then, you know, 500, 600 students.
You sort of left the cloister and went out into the world, so to speak.
Right. It was really kind of a shock.
Yeah. That's very interesting. You met your husband, Bill Fleming, in high school at TAM.
That's right.
And was he a student at Cal when you were?
No. Bill didn't go to Cal.
Did you do a little dating on the side over there?
It was very interesting. I'll tell you what happened. Bill and I met in 1934, and we started to go out together. And Bill was a year or two years ahead of me in high school. Yeah, no, 1 year. I was a sophomore, he was a junior. Anyway, it was depression times. And Bill got out of school early, and he completed his units. And so he left. Graduation, I guess, was in June, and he left in December and went to work in San Francisco. And then he decided to go to night school and study accounting. So Bill used to work 6 days a week and go to night school 4 or 5 nights a week. So he didn't really have an awful lot of time for dating. But we saw quite a bit of each other until I went to College of Marin. And at that time, he said, well, I just haven't got time to study and work and see you too, so I won't be seeing you anymore. So believe it or not, that was the end of a pretty nice romance until I was a senior in college. I didn't see Bill again until I was a senior in college. But, I mean,
And then it was not at Cal because... You saw him socially back in the home in Marin County?
No, I didn't see him at all. Oh. No, I didn't see him at all. In other words, he just had told me that he didn't have time for any dates, that he was working and going to school, and he just didn't have any time. So it wasn't until I had went east with my mother on a trip in the summer of 1940, and I wrote him a postcard in New York. And, of course, he was still in my heart, you see. I hadn't forgotten him. And I wrote him a postcard and told him where we were and that we'd be back in July. And we weren't back 2 days when the phone rang and it was Bill. So that started the romance up again. And then we went together all during my senior year in college. And then we were married the October after I graduated.
Is that 1941?
Mm-hmm.
Just before the war.
That's right.
Just barely before. And then he promptly got in the service. While you were still...
In February, February of 1942, too, he went in the service.
Where did you live then? How did that all work out?
Oh, we had... Miss Barbara Bridge, that I keep referring to. As you see, I've been very, very close to my dear Annie Bob. And she was living on Russian Hill, and Bill and I got an apartment right after we were married. I was working at that time for Columbia Steel, and Bill was working for Union Oil or Madsen. Union Oil or Madsen, I'm not sure.
What was your occupation there? What were you doing?
I was a service representative. I didn't start in, we were married. Yeah, well, it was wartime. Yeah, it was wartime. As I say, Bill was drafted in February, and I got a job as a service representative. In other words, servicing the accounts such as different steel companies would come up. I worked for Columbia Steel Company, and different steel companies would call in for orders, and so I would handle the orders over the telephone. You know, I mean, write everything down and shipping dates and all that. I remember that part of it. But it was fun. But at any rate, Annie Bob was living on Russian Hill, and we got a little apartment right near her. And then when Bill was drafted, I moved in with her. And well, Annie Bob was, as I said, was driving for the Navy, which was volunteer. And then Bill was transferred back to San Francisco, luckily for the 4th Air Force headquarters, and I was working at Columbia Steel. So we continued to do that, and we'd take turns getting dinner. Annie Bob would get dinner one night, and I would get dinner the next. Everybody was working for the war cause, and then in 1944, I was pregnant with Dennis, and so we desperately tried to find a place to live. In fact, it's very interesting, because at the time we were married, Gene and Jack Bonnard were very close to us, and they had been married a year before, and they had moved to Berkeley, and housing was practically impossible to get. I mean, just there wasn't any housing any place. And of course, we wanted to live in Marin County if I was going to quit work and have a baby. We didn't want to live in San Francisco. So they had the Bonnards lived on Ashby Avenue in Berkeley. And Jack was not in the service because he was working for CalPAC at the time. And they found a little garden cottage over there, and we almost took it. And as I look back on my life today, if we'd taken that little cottage and hadn't gotten Mrs. Clinton's guest cottage, our life and our friends would probably be completely different, because we would have lived in the East Bay, because I was Berkeley-oriented by then. I mean, I'd left Mill Valley. None of my old pal friends were here anymore. And so it was just my mom was living in Mill Valley. My sister was away at college. My brother was away in the service. So what did Mill Valley, you know, particularly have to offer us? And so we almost moved to the East Bay. And this little Mrs. Clinton's little guest cottage came up for rent. And so we moved there. In fact, while we were living in the city, we were looking at lots out in Orinda. We'd drive out there on a Sunday when we had gas and just look around at lots. And we almost bought a lot over in Orinda. Of course, you can always move back, but I mean many times, because, you know, you spend 4 years in a place like Berkeley and you become very attached to it. And of course, my family had lived there too, so Berkeley was a second home to me, because my grandmother and grandfather lived on El Camino Real, 17 El Camino Real. It's funny how you remember these numbers, but... And then my Auntie Marge lives in Berkeley and was living there too. But any rate, so then Bill, very fortunately, was sent back east, and then he was sent to San Francisco, and then he was sent again back east, and then he was sent back to San Francisco, and he never went overseas during the war. In fact, it's an interesting story about that, because Bill has a big family, too. He has two brothers. They're both married. And my family, so we would take turns, one family for Christmas and then the other family for Christmas. But during the war, Bill would say, well, we have to have Christmas with my family this year, honey, because I know I won't be here next year. And this went on during the whole war, having Christmas with the Flemings, because he knew he wouldn't be here next year.
Sort of a standard family joke.
Yeah, it is.
So you were together most of the time.
Yes, we were very, very extremely fortunate.
Indeed you were.
Yeah.
And so Dennis then was born in what, 42?
No. I think 45. I'll have to look that up for you, Carl.
Oh.
Yeah. Because the exact date.
Daughter Deborah was born when?
No, her name is Dorothy. She's Dorothy Bridge Johnson. Debbie's name is. We call her Debbie.
Oh, I see.
But her name is not Deborah. It's Dorothy Bridge Johnson. She was named after my mother.
I see. How did the Debbie business start?
Mainly because this is another funny story. My mother said the first granddaughter named after her would get $500. Well, $500 is a lot of money. And my sister is quite independent. And right after Dennis was born, my sister had a daughter. She was next in line to receive the $500. And she named her daughter Wendy. And I said to my sister, well, you're just throwing away $500. She said, well, I don't like the name Dorothy. So she named her daughter Wendy. So it was a joke when Debbie was expected, because Bill and I kidded. We said, well, her name is going to be Dorothy Bridge. But if it's a boy, well, we'll just call her DB. I mean, call him DB. Say, just making jokes. Anyway, Debbie was born, and she was Dorothy Bridge. And we got the $500, which paid for the hospital and the baby expenses. Mm-hmm.
Well, that is
unusual. But her name, the reason it's DB is the Dorothy Bridge, and Mom's always gone by DB. A lot of her friends called her DB. So when she was little, we were calling her, we didn't want to call her Dorothy, so it kind of went to DB, which kind of went into Debbie. And so that is where Debbie came from.
How about your sister, Carol?
I think you should talk to Carol. She probably has a lot of memories, too.
Undoubtedly does, yes. She's younger than you, I believe.
Yeah, she's 2.5 years younger than I am. Mm-hmm. She lives in Greenbrae. And of course, you know, really she's 2 years and 9 months younger than I am, but she had a whole different set of friends than I did naturally, you know, that age group.
Yeah.
And I can't think of any of her friends that are around in Mill Valley. Oh, yes, there's one. You talk to Carol about that, because there's a Dot Nightingale that lived in Mill Valley, who's still one of Carol's very closest friends. She doesn't live here, but they keep in touch.
You see each other frequently?
Oh, yes, all the time. I mean, well, we chat. We chat more than, in fact, I called her up the other day, and I said, Carol, I just never get to see you. I said, we have to make a date for lunch. So she's coming down and have lunch with me in a couple of weeks.
Well, you've talked about comparing the old days with the current days in Marin County ever so lightly. You just sort of touched on it. You might kind of concentrate that on that again while we're talking about your specific family a little bit more, because you lived, when I first knew you, in Mill Valley proper, down in the Locust area. Am I right? I mean,
maybe on Matilda.
Immediately after World War II.
Uh-huh. Yeah. That's right. Uh-huh.
Yeah. How did that happen, and what was your life like then?
Oh, well, let me go back. You say I didn't talk enough about it. The thing is, Mill Valley, when I was a child, and Mill Valley today, are two different worlds. It's just like drawing a curtain and saying, you know, then and now. But, I mean, Mill Valley probably is not unique in that. I mean, all the places where everybody lived my age around California, I mean, they've all grown. But to sum it up, I'd say life was, you know, maybe much simpler as far as young people concerned. I mean, I feel one of the great things I forgot to mention, Carl, I feel today that I feel sorry for the young people because there's not enough fun things for them to do. For example, one of the most fun things we had in high school and also in college was the Larkspur Rose Bowl. That was one of the most wonderful things because we go and meet, especially in junior college when you're older, but you go with a date and all your friends would be there. And then you'd say, oh, hi, meet you underneath the cow sign at intermission, you know, after the dance. And that's where your group, so to speak, would congregate and you'd exchange dances with other people. It was not at one of this dance with this fellow you came with all night. None of that. It was exchanging dances. In fact, at Tam High School, I remember the Keene dances we used to have, junior prom, senior balls, and other dances they'd have. And they would have a program. You know, you'd have a program. And all the different boys would come and sign you up for the dances. So you might have the first and the last dance. You always had the first and the last dance with the fellows that you went with. But it was mix, you know? And it was, it's so different, like, than today. I mean, people, you know, go with one person, and they're taken, and that's it. But anyway, to go on to the Larkspur Rose Bowl, that was, they did have some rough, I think there was drinking, you know, there was some drinking, but none of us, of course, you know, had drank in those days. And it was a good way to spend a very nice Saturday night. It was a marvelous orchestra, wonderful, you know, wonderful music, nice crowd, balmy evenings, just beautiful. But that's what I said today. There's no, you know, lovely place like that. But probably if they had anything like that, they'd have the bicycle riders and everything else would be there and there'd be a riot or something would happen, you know. And it probably wouldn't be allowed to be. But the kids, some of the people would... older people would stand outside, older fellas, let's put it that way. Sometimes there would be a fight or something like that. They'd get in a quarrel, probably from maybe too many beers or something like that. But
well, there's always that element around.
Right, right.
You're also touching on the fact that the drug scene has made things very different socially.
Certainly. Another wonderful part of our childhood, and I think probably all people in Marin County, was the Russian River. It was perfectly delightful. I mean, Gurney, we used to go to Gurney Wood. And sometimes my mom would, you'd ask about her. She was just a keen sport. She'd take a group up and chaperone, you know, and we'd rent. In fact, we would rent the Seymour Cottage that I believe they still own at Gurney Wood. And then again, they had wonderful bands and outdoor dancing at Rionito and Gurneyville. And
in those days, of course, you generally stayed a while, a week or two. Now you just dash in and out.
Yeah.
So that made a difference in the social arrangements.
Yeah. Although a lot of people would take their vacations up the Russian River. You know, you'd go to Gurney Wood. You never hear about anybody going up to Gurney Wood now. I don't know who goes up there, but Dill's family, however, his youngest brother has a home at Oddfellas, and that's very, very nice. But I mean, in order to keep it nice, they have a guard at the gate, and you've got to... Even when we arrive, his brother, she has to call in and say exactly who's coming through that day, give their complete names, and you have to give the names out as you go in. But, I mean, that keeps it a very nice family resort.
Where did you move to when you left the guest house at Mrs. Clinton's?
Oh, well, then we bought a little house down in Matilda. And we wanted to have another baby, and we didn't have room up there, so we bought a house down there. And we lived there, I remember, 4 or 5 years, and then we built our home on Marlin Avenue in Millville. In fact, we put that little house in the market and went to Bellinas. My mother had to build a house at Bellinas in our adult life, but it was a great place for our children to spend time. We'd go over there a lot. It was up on the cliff right by the lighthouse. In fact, it's still there, and it's a darling house. Some people live there full time now. But my children enjoyed that a lot. And of course, another thing, one thing I was going to tell you that was a really keen memory. When we'd get warm weather, hot weather like we do still, in like September or a June day, and when my This is what I guess when I was, before I was 12. But anyway, my dad would come over on the commute home, and we'd pick him up at the high school, and we'd drive over to Stinson Beach for a cookout. And I remember my mother sending me downtown to get lamb chops, and you'd get those little teeny rib lamb chops. And they were, I remember this distinctly, they were 10 cents a piece. 10 cents a piece for a little, you know, thick, but the little lamb chops. And I remember it would be a hot day, and so she'd call my dad in the city and say, well, we'll meet you at 5 o'clock, whatever the time was, and we'd drive over to, it would be the Big Lagoon usually, because we call that, Muir Beach was big, called Big Lagoon. And we'd have a picnic, evening picnic over there. But, you know, and those beaches are still there, and I'm sure, you know, they're certainly used, Carl, but, for example, another way things have changed, I remember one hot day last September, I said to Bill, let's go to the beach. So we went to the beach. Well, I mean, it was just like going to a foreign country. I mean, it was crowded, bumper to bumper at the beach. And to be perfectly honest, it was just much nicer to stay home. Because, I mean, that is one thing, like our daughter lives in Australia. And you go to the beach there, and it's just like Marin County was when I was a child. There aren't even that many people on it. But you can go to many, many beaches over there, and you're the only person on the beach. You have this beautiful, you know, but that's, it used to be like that over there, too. But, I mean, now every place you go is crowded, you know. And to me, that's one of the saddest things about growth, is that there's just no, except in your own home, there's just very few places you can go around, like for a picnic. Except, I will say today, Angel Island is great. I mean, you can go to Angel Island and take a lunch and walk around and be by yourself and be quiet and not just be with throngs of people. But the beaches now are just, you know, just crowded where they never used to be. Oh, and that's another thing about the beaches. We used to have wonderful fun. I mean, we'd all go as a group. A group of us would go, boys and girls, and we'd take hot dogs and buns, and we'd swim in that cold water, build a big fire, and have a weenie roast. And I have wonderful memories of that. I mean, we just did it all the time. During high school, that was mainly because in groups, because the fellows would have a car. But we just had wonderful times doing that. And maybe they do today. I really don't know, but I can hardly see the kids getting in the car and going to the beach for a weenie roast. But maybe it happens. I don't know.
I don't think it's your standard entertainment.
For young people, right.
I think it's done, but. Mm-hmm. Not as frequently.
You know, it would be a fun thing to do. I don't know whether you have done it, but it would be a fun thing to do, if you could, to get some younger generation who live in Mill Valley, whether they're connected with any of the old or not, and talk about Mill Valley today in 1979.
We've done that once, and you're right. It's extremely interesting, no question about it. Speaking of young people, tell me about your grandchildren.
Well, very exciting. We have, let me go back a little bit, because I think it's an interesting story. Debbie went to Santa Clara, and her junior year, she went to the University of Vienna, and she was there for 1 year. And what they did, if they could, they could get their studying out of the way, was a marvelous opportunity during that year abroad was to go different places on weekends, because it was so easy, you know, to get places. And so
what was she studying, by the way?
What was she studying?
What was her major?
Sociology was her name. And at any rate, she now is a nurse, however, in Canberra, Australia. But at any rate, on one of her weekends, she went to France on a skiing venture. And she stayed at a youth hostel. And there she met her present husband, Kenneth Cameron, who came from Scotland. His home was in Scotland. However, he was on his way to Oxford University, and he had a scholarship to Oxford. And they met. And the year Debbie finished in Vienna, her year was up in 1968, and that was Bill's and our first trip to Europe. And we met Debbie on July 4th, I remember it well, in Vienna. The hottest, and Vienna was the hottest day, the hottest country in the world that day. It was scoring way up to 100 degrees temperature, very hot. At any rate, we had done some of the travels, and then we met her, and she was going to continue our travels with us. And she had mentioned to us when we got to France that Kenneth was traveling around because his family didn't think he was quite old enough to enter Oxford. He needed a little more growing up to do. So what Kenneth was doing was going around and working and earning some money, and then he would travel on to another place. So he was just traveling all of Europe for this time. At any rate, we ended up meeting Kenneth in Ireland. And then after when Bill and I came home, Kenneth wanted Debbie to go to Scotland and meet her parents, which she did. And then Debbie went back to college and finished her senior year. And that first, that summer, she had a job with the blind, a camp for the blind in Southern California. And she'd gotten Kenneth a job, too, doing the sports and teaching the children fishing. So Kenneth came over, and that was the end of Debbie being in the United States. They were married that year, and they moved to England, and they lived in Oxford. And Kenneth finished college in Oxford, and then he taught for a year there, and they decided that England really wasn't the place that they wanted to live. And so one night he was reading the paper or a magazine and saw an advertisement for transportation over and back from Australia and a scholarship at the National University of Australia to get his doctorate. So he applied and was accepted. And so they have lived in Australia ever since. To get to my grandchildren, Jacob Cameron is now 9, and Zoe Cameron is now 2, and they just
the
had a
female?
Zoe, a little girl, yeah.
How do you spell that?
Zoe. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then a little girl, and they had another little girl this last April, and then her name is Ella May, and they call her Ella. Ellie.
Wonderful. A very touching, sweet, loving, nice story, I must say. I like it. Tell us about Dennis.
Oh, Dennis is Denny's very interesting. His present status is he teaches a school in the public schools in San Anselmo, and because of the teacher shortage, Dennis has never been able to ever had the opportunity to teach a regular classroom. He's always been involved with the educationally handicapped child, which means that they have other problems too, or they wouldn't really be educationally handicapped. Behavior problems and many, many other problems. But I think he does a very good job of that, and he seems to enjoy it very much. And he lives in Woodacre. He bought a house last year in Woodacre, and seems very happy.
Where did he take his training for this type of work?
Well, he went to the University of California, and he proceeded to flunk out of that. Then he had to go back to College of Marin and make up some credits. Then he finally went to San Jose State, and we thought we'd never going to get Dennis through college. Dennis has changed greatly because he used to be more or less the playboy, and he's completely the opposite. He's the great runner and the great athlete and the dieter and watching the calories and grows all his own vegetables and has a cute little place with lots of fruit trees and grapes. And he's gone a complete cycle. All we need now is for Dennis to find a nice girl and get married. He's never been married, so. But if
how,
he doesn't
how
hurry,
old is
and
he?
He'd make a marvelous father. He'll be 35 in July.
Uh-huh.
But he'd make a marvelous father. He's fantastic with children, just terrific. Great patience, understanding, and
you'd
great
have to
love.
To be in the work that he's in and be a success at it.
Yeah, but I hope he will find a nice person because he wants to have children, but he's not getting any younger.
He's changed a lot the last last 10 years,
yeah.
or less than that,
yeah.
no question about it.
Yeah.
Gee, this has been wonderful visiting with you, Pat. What else do you think of? Any more little gems here we've left out?
No, I don't think so, Carl. I can't think of anything more, really.
Interesting perspective.
It's a lovely...
Interesting view of the whole thing you've given us.
It's a lovely place to live. And Bill's and my travel, we certainly haven't been everywhere, but there's never any place we go that we don't say, oh, there's no place like home. It's so lovely here. Of course, one of the things, too, Carl, I do want to stress is that I think that, as I said before, the people who come to Mill Valley usually come with almost love in their heart. They drive in, they must say, oh, this is beautiful. I wonder if we could afford to live here, you know? And I kind of have to laugh. I have to say this. I kind of have to laugh because when I was growing up, the place to live in Marin County definitely was Upper Marin County. I mean, Ross and that area. I mean, and Mill Valley was just sort of, well, Mill Valley. Now, to my knowledge, there's been a book and two articles written on Mill Valley, and which is too bad in a way because everybody's going to, well, we have to go mm-hmm. see this place. And maybe it's going to bring in the wrong type, but I do feel as a whole, I mean, the people that live in Mill Valley just love it. They just fall in love with it, you know, and so they must make, you know, good citizens.
Not to mention the little song, which
yeah,
is played
right.
all over the United States,
mm-hmm.
believe it or not.
Mm-hmm.
So Mill Valley is the best known name in Marin County now. That's a good point you make, it's
mm-hmm.
true.
In fact, you say it's well known. I remember we used to go down to Aptos. La Jolla on vacation. And my sister and I would go down with my grandfather on the boat, I can't remember the name of these two boats, but anyway, they were sister and brother ships. And in conversation with the deckhands, they'd say, well, where do you live? Well, here we were about 600 miles from the Golden Gate, and you'd say Mill Valley. Well, where's that? I can remember that. Isn't that funny? I can remember that. Well, where's that? You know? They never heard of Mill Valley.
That's not true now.
No. Well, one good thing about it, it can't really grow too much because there's no place to go. In other words, it's Greenbelt really surrounds
mm-hmm.
it.
The terrain, in a sense, saves us from ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Thank heaven.
Yeah.
Well, we're very fortunate people in so many ways.
Yeah.
And your whole tape and your whole life is a testimony to that, too. Thank you again, Pat, for talking with us.
You're very welcome.
You were just telling me, Pat, that you left something very important out. Let's talk about it for
all
a
All right.
Minute.
Yes, I did. I feel that the Art Girard Club, I haven't even mentioned that, and it was, I'd say, one of the most important parts of my adult life for this reason. In the first place, my grandmother, Carrie Bridge, was one of the founders of the Art Girard Club, and a very good family friend of ours, Flora B. Reynolds, who was a friend of my grandmother's, was also a founder, and she was always close to us as we were growing up. But the Art Girard Club has made such a great contribution in so many ways to, I feel, the people in the Mill Valley who have belonged to it. For example, I joined, and I didn't drive a car. I had a small baby. I would get all dressed for the Outdoor Art Club. This was when Dennis was about 2 years old. Get all dressed for the Outdoor Art Club with dress, glove, bag, and hat. Walk him down to a babysitter on Lovell Avenue with the tailor Todd. Leave him there for a few hours and go to Outdoor Art Club. But the reason I say it's important is that all of my present friends I met through practically the Art Girard Club. And it is still functioning in the same way. But the unfortunate part is, Carl, so many of the young people now are working. And I was talking to my sister the other day, who is a past president of the Art Girard Club, and I said, Carol, what is going to happen to the club? Where are we going to get the people? Because the young people, it's hard. Like, for example, I want this friend of mine for her to join, and I've gone to club a couple of times, and I've looked around, and there aren't any young people anymore. Like Mimi Bennett's George Bennett's wife, and her mother-in-law belonged to our Jar Club, and George would like her to belong. But I said, I want you to think about this, because they're just not the young people. But we've got to get them from someplace, because we wouldn't want it to collapse. And the older people are going to die off, and what's going to keep it going? Because they're just our change of life. But at any rate, the Art Jar Club has just been absolutely a wonderful place. I haven't gone to it for very many years now, because I go to the symphony, and it's on Thursday, and the symphony season starts, and you can't do both, so that's why. And then I went into the, I was very interested in the Junior Auxiliary and Sunny Hills, and I was on the board of directors of that for 9 years, and I'm still involved in the Mill Valley Guild. In fact, I'm president now for the second year. So your interest,
is that
the
Sunny Hills?
Yeah, Sunny Hills. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. And which is up in San Anselmo, home for emotionally disturbed children. In a pitch here. Mm-hmm. And but so your interests do change. But I'm still a member of the club. But I think it's it was in my life a very important part, because we used to have the dances. You remember them, Carl?
Oh, indeed.
And the dinner parties.
Big social
right
event of the town and of Southern Marin. Uh-huh.
And it still is for probably the new people, mm-hmm. who are into the club. Okay.
Let's also talk for just a minute, Pat, about some of your public activities during your married years since World War II.
All right. Well, I remember working on for many years, I can't remember how many, on the musical chest. And then I remember working very hard on United Crusade. And I remember dear Gene Crawford was chairman one year, and he called me and he said, Pat, I'm chairman of the United Crusade for Marin County. He said, I was wondering if you'd take over Mill Valley. And I remember we were living on Corbendere Avenue at the time. We just sold our house on Matilda, and we were building. And we lived there for a year while our house was being built, or almost a year. And I remember doing that. And then I joined the Junior Auxiliary of Sunny Hills, which is, it's still functioning. And it's a group of 40 women who, in those days, used to work directly with the children at Sunny Hills. And I was a member of that. And that, you have to... Well, Sunny Hills is a home in San Anselmo that is a home right at the present time for emotionally disturbed children, but it was originally started out at 75 years ago as an orphanage. And as time has changed and there isn't no more need for an orphanage, it went into a home for children mainly that didn't have mothers or didn't have fathers or didn't have both. And however, the way the world has changed, it is now a home for extreme cases of emotionally disturbed children. And it is now, the role is different of the Junior Auxiliary today, because most of them are not, the members are not trained to work with this type of child. And so mainly their function at the time is raising money for Sunny Hills. And it, of course, it always has been. In those days, they had the lovely charity ball, which they unfortunately had to give up, because there just weren't that many people who were going to dress in formal attire to go to a party. But anyway, they carry on their activities. Well, then from there, I was a founding member in the Guild Governing Council, because in the old days, the board of directors of Sunny Hills ran everything, and the job got to be so large that they formed the Guild Governing Council, and their purpose was to run the Great Festival, which is the main volunteer activity of the Sunny Hills volunteers that put on the Great Festival every year and earn in one day's performance, but one year's effort on all these number of guilds that belong to Sunny Hills, to raise approximately $30,000 a year for Sunny Hills. So I was on that for several years, and then I was asked to become a board member of the Board of Directors of Sunny Hills, which I served on for 9 years. In fact, that's the maximum term. You're reelected every 3 years, and then the end of the 9 years where you go off, and or you can go off before. But it's always been very close to my heart, and I feel they do a very fine job. And as years go on, the program gets more expensive and more expensive, so it just takes more time to sell the program because it's a very vital and very vital program. And in other words, you're really working with kids today who would undoubtedly end up in San Quentin eventually if they didn't have some help. I mean, it's that severe a case of these youngsters being handled. Anyway, and then I've also been a member of the Redwood Guild of Sunny Hills, which is in Mill Valley, and I've continued my membership with that, and am now president of that for my second year, and have thoroughly enjoyed that. And that's a very wonderful group. It's made up of I'd say the old timers of Mill Valley and the new ones that we have been able to try to get young ones that are moving into Mill Valley to join it. So, but it only has a membership of 34. But we work very hard on that with our making of our chutney every year. In fact, the Redwood Guild, there are about 20 guilds for Sunny Hills, and the Redwood Guild is always either first or second in the amount of money that they raise a year as far as guilds go. So we have a very good reputation.
You've made a specialty of the chutney business, haven't you?
Yes.
Do I remember buying that at the grape festival many times, or don't I?
I don't know whether you're a chutney lover or not, Carl.
Yes,
you have it.
I am.
The recipe came from, Connolly Wellington, and it's called Colonel Wellington's Chutney.
Uh-huh.
And it's in great demand, it really is. I mean, they make several thousand jars of it, and there's always a waiting list of people who want it. And that's our main thing. We do other things like marmalade, and we do the plum raspberry jam with Seymour's plums and other plums that we can get. But I think that's just, and then of course the Outdoor Art Club. I mean, I was on board there for many years and was vice president. I never accepted the presidency and have a regret that I never did, but the time just didn't seem right in my life where I had the time to devote to it. And I remember somebody saying to me, Pat, don't wait too long, because if you wait too long, you'll never do it. And that's exactly what happened. But it's the Outdoor Art Club, I think of anything, is extremely close to my heart, because I think they provide a lot of pleasures for many people. And
you must take great joy out of realizing that now the famous building,
yes,
designed by Maybeck, is a
right.
National monument.
Right.
So that's a very nice thought, isn't it?
Yes. In fact, the only other one that I was familiar with, well, Berkeley, being I've been close to Berkeley, there's quite a few Maybeck buildings in Berkeley, too. They do have a similarity.
But this is the only one.
Yes.
Incredible, as it may seem, to be so honored.
To be belonging to the historical.
Maybeck building.
Mm-hmm.
At this point, at least.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, which really helps us tremendously, because tax-wise, we were having a terrible time. It looked almost like that we're going to have to give it up in time. I mean, the handwriting on the wall was Proposition 13, and then this, it is, it's really saved it, yeah.
Yeah.
And it would be terrible, to have it torn down or used for a recreational center, or not taken care of. Because an awful lot of money per year goes into preserving that building.
Well, it would just take something out of the lives of all of us who were here for many years when the Outdoor Art Club was thriving.
Mm-hmm.
All the social events there have meant so much to me over the years. Precious memories.
Yes, they are, Carl. They are precious memories.
Yeah. Well, what else have you done? Is that the list?
Well, that's all I can think of. I'm always doing something. Oh, I know. A new interest I have now, I joined a Marin Art and Garden Center 2 years ago, and I'm thoroughly enjoying that. The only thing I don't like about it is you have to put in so many hours a year, and so you feel, I think it's extremely worthwhile. Again, it's a place like the Outdoor Art Club, an area, and that has to be preserved. And it just takes a lot of working hours on volunteer hours in order to raise the money to keep the Marin Art and Garden Center for everybody's use. That's one thing that I think is too bad. A lot of people, I think, who come to Marin County and drive through there don't realize that it is open to the public. And they want you to come in, you know, to the antique shop, to the many things, their little luncheon place and all of that.
Well, that's the official list. I know you've had a reputation all your life as a Good Samaritan type, and you've done a lot of wonderful things that don't get on the list. I think this little addendum we put on the end of our discussion here today may be the most interesting part. Thanks again, Pat.
Welcome, Carl.